So the passage that we heard read this morning is of Jesus calling the disciples. And we're going to look at the Gospels and see the disciples coming to join Jesus in different ways. We've all come in different ways, and we can learn from how to help others to come to Jesus, even by realizing some people will respond to a different call than we did. I think the response to call for many is a process that then continues. It's an internal process, a continual surrender. We'll look at what it's calling you from and to. And finally, I want to look at that internal process, to look at what are we holding back from Jesus. And you'll have an opportunity to respond to God today. So let's look first at the different ways to come. Now in John 1, verse 35 to 50, John the Baptist points Jesus out to his disciples. Do you remember he said Andrew was one of those disciples who followed John the Baptist, and he and another disciple, when John the Baptist pointed out Jesus to him, well, they followed Jesus. They left John the Baptist and they went to follow Jesus. And then Andrew went to find his brother Simon Peter, and he brings Simon Peter to meet Jesus. And Jesus finally finds Philip, and he says to Philip, follow me. But then Philip finds Nathanael and invites him to come to Jesus. And then Jesus shares a word of knowledge with Nathanael and prophesies over him. So just from these few examples, we can see that sometimes we come to Jesus because truth is pointed out to us. So John the Baptist is a spiritual leader, and he teaches and he reveals Jesus to those who follow him. Sometimes we come because a relative or a friend invites us. And sometimes Jesus directly calls us. Sometimes we come to Jesus because of what I'd call a spiritual encounter. Jesus gave a word of knowledge and prophesied. And these spiritual encounters reveal that there is a spiritual world. And for some, that's enough. And they'll now seek to know more about this world and about Jesus as a result of that revelation. So when you read the different Gospels, they give different accounts, actually, of how the disciples were called. Interestingly, this is one of the reasons that justify the Gospels as true accounts. The fact that there was variation in the telling of the events shows us it's real. If they gave the same account, it would have seemed more that they were colluding, that they'd got together and somehow planned what to say, and that therefore it would make them an unreliable witness. But the fact there's a variation makes it more a reliable witness statement. So the Gospel of Mark and Matthew says Andrew was fishing with Simon Peter when Jesus called them. Not that Andrew was with John the Baptist. And that Jesus then saw James and John and called them. And the Gospel of Luke says he called Simon Peter after the miracle of the fish. You know when Jesus says, can I borrow your boat a minute? And he preaches, and then he says, oh, cast your net into the sea, and they bring up this big catch of fish. That's when Luke says he called Simon Peter and Andrew. So the writers of the Gospels wrote according to what was important to them. So Luke recalls Simon Peter and Andrew being called at the end of Jesus' teaching, which was then followed by a miracle. You can almost imagine them saying to Peter as they read these different Gospels, well, don't you remember the miracle? Jesus borrowed Peter's boat and told him to toss the net in for the fish, and they caught lots and lots. And the others saying, no, I've forgotten about that. The reason that I came was because I trusted my brother. And that's what made me come. You see, we all need to hear from God in different ways. Some of us need to hear good teaching. It's more of an intellectual journey. Reading a case for Christ or who moved the stone. Helpful teaching that explains the evidence, convincing us that Jesus is who he says he is. My husband Paul's journey was more like that. Some come to hear about Jesus because they're told by a friend or a family member that they trust. And the response to come is partially based on the trust in that family member. Maybe for children brought up in a Christian home, it can be like that. Some are moved by a spiritual experience, a word of knowledge or an answer to prayer. They experience a miracle. And some come through a traumatic experience, which drives them to God or forces them to consider God. Maybe even gives them time to contemplate God that they've never had, or an inclination to consider him that they've never had before. Some walk forward in a response to an evangelist's appeal. One of the strongest Christians I knew walked forward at a Billy Graham crusade. And I think I always thought that that was just an emotional, short-lived thing that wouldn't last. But she was such a spiritual woman, and she served as a church army officer all her life. Some have a direct encounter with Jesus, and he reveals himself to them, and he calls them to respond. We're all different, and God knows what we need. There isn't just one way to Jesus, one way that's legitimate, and the others are a bit dubious or less real. Some people aren't even looking for God, like Matthew, the tax collector. He was just getting on with his work when Jesus called him. Where others are seeking, like the paralytic man who came for healing. But actually, he met with Jesus as the forgiver of sins. So sometimes we experience a different Jesus from the one we were expecting. Then there's acts of kindness. Being in receipt of kindness or witnessing kindness from a Christian can be a catalyst to inspire people to change and to repentance and faith. The works of some can be a catalyst to faith in others. Maybe that's what happened with the paralyzed man, whose friends carried him to Jesus. Maybe it was their kindness that witnessed to him. But as we think about all these things that people become Christians, I know that you'll all have been identifying with your own journey. But we can use all these opportunities. In fact, perhaps we should be challenged to use different ones than we've used before to reach people. Have you tried giving someone a book? Or being actively kind? Or praying for healing for someone? Let's stretch ourselves and extend our repertoire. Ask God, what does this person need in order to hear or respond to your call? Are we sticking to what feels easier to us rather than what would be helpful to them? So once Jesus had called the disciples, what then? Well, I think it was a process. Jesus trained them. They spent time with him and together. He was training them, teaching them what to do, showing them his priorities and values. Jesus says, come, follow me. Follow me, a person. We're not called to follow the Christian view of gender or euthanasia, not to pause and say, what's the Christian view of sexuality? The more important Jesus, the more important question is, who is Jesus? Is he who he says he is? Is Jesus the Son of God? Did he die and rise again? Is he judge? That's the first question. The only question, really. And after you've decided, you can then figure out what he said about the issues that are important to you. When I was on the road to becoming a Christian, the thing that held me back was heaven. I didn't really believe in heaven. After you die, it's just like before you were born, isn't it? That's what I thought. And someone said to me, just put that aside, Jill. Don't get stuck on it. You don't have to have all the answers before you decide if Jesus is who he says he is. The first thing is Jesus who he says he is? Do I want to follow him? Give my life to him? And how am I going to relate to him? I didn't need to have all my doubts answered. And you don't have to agree with his agenda before you follow him. In 3 of the Gospels, Jesus is described as saying to Matthew, come and follow me. And immediately he gets up and follows Jesus. It's hard to know why Jesus followed him. Most commentators say he was probably already acquainted with Jesus and the disciples, and that makes it more explicable, doesn't it? Or maybe he had no friends and he just wanted to feel accepted and to belong. Jesus is calling Matthew and the other disciples into a new career. He wasn't a hypnotist like, follow me, and up they'd get and follow him. Although, it's an all or nothing decision, isn't it? In a way, we all lose our lives when we follow him. But we choose to do so as we realise he lost his life for us. Tim Keller says, Jesus stands between us and death. Jesus says no to our death. He rescues us from death. And we can be really struggling with daily life until we look at Jesus and see what he does for us. If he can do this, so can I rise up and follow him. So Jesus called the disciples and he trained them. He prepared them for a change in their lives and in their work, in their lifestyles, in their religion. He was organised. He chose 12 from the disciples to be apostles. What is Jesus calling you from and to? Will you learn from him? Do you need to gather a team around you to help you? Jesus calls us to himself, into a relationship with him, to get to know him, to become like him. Not in an external, when Jesus encounters this situation, this is how he behaved, therefore that's how I've got to behave. But it's more in a surrendering way. A way that says, I give you my heart to use and change. A heart that says, I surrender doing things my way to doing them your way. When you're baptised or confirmed, whatever your church does, practices, or whatever your theological belief is about that, whether you do it when you're 7 months, or when you're seven, when you're 17, when you're 70, those don't make you a Christian. Something has to happen to you. There is something to do with understanding, yes. I understand who Jesus is and what he did. I understand, but it doesn't stop at an intellectual understanding. There's a deeper understanding, and I need to apply it. It's like the story of the sower in Matthew's Gospel, where the seed fell on good soil, and that represented those who truly hear and understand, or hear and fully embrace, as the Passion Translation puts it. This understanding is so important that Paul prays for it in his letters. In his letters to the believers, letters to the Ephesians, he says that he prays they'll have spiritual wisdom and insight, that they'll understand the love of God for them. It's a process that goes on all through our lives. It isn't like, oh, I've got it now. It goes on all through our lives, and we understand it and we know how to apply it. A Christian is someone who has been and is being made utterly new. So we use language like giving our lives to God, inviting him into our hearts. Because when we give our lives to God, it's not in the way that now I'll only do what you want me to do, although that is part of it. But when we surrender to him, he renews our mind. He changes our hearts. Maybe we think, I could never forgive that person anymore. I can't let that go. And then actually you realise, I don't feel that way anymore. I can let that go. I can leave it with God to judge. I no longer need to hold on to that anger and hatred. I surrender it to God. He's been changing your heart on this process to bring you to this point where you can step into this new level of freedom, this new place of becoming like Jesus, this new level of trust in him. Billy Graham says it's like a sign over your heart that says under new management. There's a cost. Billy Graham was keen to make people recognise the cost of following Christ. He describes it as the cost of your body to keep it under discipline. He describes the lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, and pride of life. There's a cost as we give up certain things. There's a cost to following Jesus, leaving behind an old life and following a new way. But God helps him God himself helps us in the process. The process begins with a revelation of who God is. And that isn't just in the start of your Christian life, but it continues as we go through life. Everything we go through can reveal to us who God is. Sometimes as we go through life, things happen that aren't great. A good question to ask God is, who do you want to be to me, for me, in this situation? In this situation, God, of poor health or overwhelmed with work, you ask God, who do you want to be to me in this situation? The answer to that question often lifts your faith and it gives you more confidence and faith in the situation. God often comes as the answer you need. The process of following God's call also includes a revelation of who you are. If you struggle to know God really loves you, come for ministry. Let others help you to find that revelation. Let them help you to identify that blockage that prevents you from seeing yourself as he sees you. Chris Vallotton, whose sermons I like to listen to, spoke recently about radical faith. He says radical faith is birthed in a revelation of who you are. Chris Vallotton says God identifies you by the character traits that you need for the season you're in. Now, years ago, all the elders in the church, there were different elders at that time, they all taught on Sunday mornings except me. And that felt occasionally awkward as they talked about who could manage to teach when. And I felt, it didn't bother me, but I just felt awkward in the meeting when they were all talking about it. And then gradually that changed and God opened up an opportunity for me. And now I think, God, I'm teaching so much. And then I feel, well, I haven't got a theology degree. I haven't been to Bible college. I quote other people and what they've said. It isn't always things that you've directly said to me, God. And I feel guilty. But God's been encouraging me. And you encourage me when you say, oh, I've helped you and that was so good. And I know that this is part of the treasure God has given me. And therefore, in this season of not having a minister, God identifies me as teacher. It's the trait he's given me for the season that we're in. So what season are you in? What character trait is he calling out to you in this season? How is he using it? What is God revealing to you that he wants you to do? God calls us to follow him, to become like him, to relate to him, and he calls us to do something. What are you called to do? Maybe you're arguing against that calling because of the difficulties you foresee. Every ministry has pain, even if it's self-doubt or fear of backlash or criticism. It takes up your time. It leaves you tired afterwards. But it's okay if you know that pain or discomfort or lack of having fun has a purpose. You know God is calling you to this. Do you need help clarifying your assignment that the Lord is calling you to? Or to be sure what you're doing is what God is calling you to. When you know what you're doing is what God has called you to, however difficult it is, you can find you can cope with it better, as though there is a peace knowing this is God's call. This is his assignment to me. Radical faith, like the disciples showed, leaving their nets in their jobs, required radical obedience. But it starts with a response. A going to Jesus to find out, then an obedience to what he calls you to. But maybe you need to ask God, what is my assignment? Maybe it's bringing your problem to him and asking him, what do you say about my problem? Is your problem another person or a child? Then come to God and ask, God, what do you say about Susan? Take time to listen yourself. And sometimes the best way for you to hear is when you're with other Christians, when you're surrounded by them. I can hear really easily when I'm in house group. I read a passage and I hear much better what God is saying in that passage of scripture when I'm in house group. And yet I'm doing exactly the same thing when I'm on my own, in my own quiet time. I ask him in silence just the same. But when I'm in house group, it's almost as if their being there clears the channel and I can hear better. So maybe it's the same for you too. Coming and asking God with two of the ministry team alongside you might be what you need to enable you to hear. Ask God what he thinks about the person you have a problem with. Then begin to tell them. So not in a freaky way, God told me this about you. Unless you think they're the sort of person that would respond to that. Say he said, I love the way they help others. Or the way they quietly consider people rather than jumping in and judging them. When you're with that person who you actually struggle with, you'll see it more, as God has pointed it out to you. And you can comment on it. You're so good at helping others. Or you're good at holding back and not judging others. And it'll encourage them. And call it out of them. Call out of them the nature God has given them. So that they do it even more. And alternatively, say you have a sibling, say, who you struggle with. Ask God, how do you see my sibling? Then you can pray. And when he says to you, well, they get caught up in problems. I've designed them to have a problem and be creative and create something wonderful past that problem. But they get caught in the problem. Then you can pray and you say, Lord, I pray for my sister. I pray that she'll no longer be fixed in that problem. I pray that the creativity you've placed in her will shoot forth and she'll become all you've created her to be. You can pray those things into being. Now, finally, is there anything you're holding back from Jesus? Are there any parts of Jesus' teaching that you're tempted to avoid or reject? Loving your enemies, perhaps, or forgiving someone who's hurt you. Perhaps I struggle to surrender my ambitions or my finances to God. Whatever you're struggling with, bring it to the Lord. Now, ministry team, would you come forward to the sides? During the rest of the service, come forward and sit in these front seats or stand at the front. Whichever feels the right response to you. And the ministry team will come and pray with you. If it's too noisy, then tell them, actually, I prefer to go out, and then they can take you to the vestry room and you can pray quiet in a quiet place to receive prayer. Don't let anything put you off from responding to God's call today. Is he calling you to give your life, your mind, to Jesus? Are you holding back? Maybe you don't know what you're holding back, but maybe you feel your faith is stale. Will you ask him, what's the cause? Do you need help to hear? Then come forward. Or maybe you just need time to set aside and have time with God, either now or later on your own. And then you'll speak to him about it. And as we enter into this next time of worship, use this time to do business with God. Make this worship a time when you declare the words to God as a surrender, as a promise. Engage your heart, not just your mind. But don't miss out this morning on opening yourself to God, to what he has to say to you through the ministry team. Here they are. You know who they are. All you have to do is come and sit on the front row or stand at the front, and they'll come and ask you, what would you like prayer for? And they'll come and pray with you. And if you can't hear, say, can we just move? I can't hear. Don't let anything get in the way. Meet with God this morning and encounter him. Let's do some business with God.